Hello, everybody, and welcome to the podcast, Discover the Hidden Potential of Your Mind. Usually the host is Angelica Baum, and today I will be hosting the podcast. Once again, you may recognize me and my voice from before. I am Dave Anderson, longtime client and friend of Angelica. And today we are going to be diving into a topic that I know a lot of people will be interested in, especially if you're a parent. If you've gone through the process of having a child, this will be extremely relevant for you. We're going to be talking about marriage after having a baby. And Angelica, you know, after you officiated my sister's wedding back in the summertime, which was actually just a few months ago now, we talked about doing a podcast on this, you know, what it's like when a couple, they get married, right? They're in that honeymoon phase and it's like, everything seems to be rainbows and butterflies and it's easy and you're so in love and you just had a wedding, possibly a romantic honeymoon. And typically, now this is, you know, the timelines vary marriage to marriage. Every situation is, of course, different. But then comes that time for a lot of couples. They decide they want to start a family. They want to have a baby. And so they go through that process. And then there's a baby. And I think that for a lot of folks, and, you know, myself and Jenny now having three kids under the age of seven, we've been through this a few times now. And we've experienced firsthand how the marriage is almost like two separate marriages before having a baby and after having a baby. Obviously, there's some similarities. You're still technically the same people. However, it is such a massive transition that it's important to really slow down long enough to be able to figure out how to now almost recreate or at least create a new marriage or sustain a strong marriage after having a baby. And that's obviously what we're here to speak about today. So it sounds like you've got some really powerful ideas on this, Angelica, and I'm excited to sort of dive in. What are some of the sort of initially here, some of the things that we need to think about and be mindful of in this transition?
Well, first of all, thank you again for doing this. I really appreciate when you're interviewing me and we can have a good dialogue going. And you're the perfect person to talk about this topic, obviously, yeah. with your kids being about 6, 4, and 1, right?
Yeah.
So when we first talked about this, I was a little overwhelmed because it's a vast topic. Mm-hmm. So much changes, and we could go into so many different directions with this topic. But I would suggest let's just focus on marriage when there's the first baby and when there's little ones. So really that period, because these are the most stressful years for a young couple. And I, you know that I do this course for your Powerful Life Partnership to prepare newlyweds that they can build a solid foundation for their relationship, for their marriage, for their life. And one of the areas I actually assess with them is having children and parenting. So there's certain questions that most people don't even ask, right? So what impact might having children have on your marriage? Let's talk about this. Let's talk about expectations. What challenges or changes do you foresee? What changes do you want to make compared to your own family, how you grew up, how your parents raised you or disciplined you, right? What do you want to keep from childhood? Or what do you see as your responsibilities parenting, right? So all these things that people never talk about. You know yourself how challenging it is. And what do you think of when we're talking about how a relationship has changed or changes when children come into the picture?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, well, there's actually two major things that come to mind. Number one is the way that you experience time completely changes, because you're used to a lifestyle pre-baby where your time is your own. And certainly you make time for your partner and your relationship, but you've got your work, your professional life, you've got your relationship, you know, and oftentimes you're already living. In my case, we were already living together for years prior to having children. And it was just It was very easy to find time for one another, because there's lots of it. You go to work and then you hang out and it's pretty simple. And you've got your weekends. And then the moment there's a baby who depends on you for absolutely everything, all of a sudden there's dozens and dozens of hours every week that are already spoken for. Like, there's going to be a certain block of time where, well, these hours are going to be, you're going to be giving it to your baby. And that means that, number one, you don't have time for yourself. Forget about your relationship. And you don't have the time for your relationship it decreases substantially. So that's the first subject I'd say would I'd be interested to hear you speak on, is the time. But then second is, well, is the parenting philosophies. Because you have two people who obviously came from different households, came from different parents. So, you know, generally four different parents between the two, you know, mom and dad, Jenny's mom and dad, and my mom and dad. So you have two different sets of experiences in terms of the way that I was parented, the way that she was parented. And so now we're coming together and we're going to become parents. And oftentimes, without even realizing it, you start to learn fairly quickly that your innate parenting philosophies don't necessarily match up. And you have to recreate your own parenting philosophies as a new couple who is now parenting. So if we could really get into those topics, the time and the parenting philosophies, I think that's really where a lot of the juice is for the people that are tuning in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. So the parenting philosophies, just to start there, maybe, absolutely. And that's what young couples underestimate. They might touch on certain things. They come maybe from a fairly similar background, no huge cultural differences. When you have cross-cultural marriages, it gets even more complicated.
Yes.
And they think, okay, we're going to figure this out. But the... it's in the details. There's so many details that need to be worked out with kids. And now is when communication is more important than ever. So if the communication skills were already lacking before, but you could manage without communicating your feelings, your thoughts, now communicating, compromising, not making the other one wrong for what they have learned or what they believe in. And like you said so nicely, developing your own individual philosophy, setting also boundaries with intrusive family members, right, who want to give advice, and showing up as a team. Where you can say thank you if a family member or friend has good advice, thank you, we'll think about it, but making very clear that you as the couple are making the decisions. Mm-hmm. So this is where really connection is challenged. I'm always so big on connection. Like when I work with couples, no matter what period in their life and their relationship there I add, I get them connect, make eye contact, touch, listen deeply, share properly, feel mm-hmm. each other. So that's where young parents often, and that's where the topic time comes in, experience a disconnect, because yes. most of the time is allocated to the children. And children, I mean, small children, of course, demand our attention, rightfully so, right? They need a lot of touch and physical closeness. They're really dependent on us. And then often at the end of the day, it feels there's no energy left for my partner. So all these wonderful advice on romantic date nights and so on. This is good advice, but we also need to be realistic. You need to find reliable babysitters. That's why I would recommend to a couple to already, before they have children, basically talk about who could be a reliable babysitter, who would be willing to really step up and help us out. Because family time is important, but time together as a couple is also extremely important to keep that connection. Mm-hmm. If we put the marriage on autopilot, that's where most people fail. I think 50% of all young people today can expect that by the time they're 18, they're living in a one-parent household. Because parenting after children, relationship after children, when the parents get so much more complicated. And then also, and that again is, I do realize this is ideally carving out some time that each parent has also time to follow some interests. The three kids under seven, of course, that's out the window.
Yeah, no time for hobbies.
Right? No time for hobbies. But having that as a goal to get there again sooner or later. And how do we make that happen? I think an important question I hear is from young couples, or what I hear as an expectation, that their marriage will stay the same or get back to normal after a short transition time. And I honestly have to say no, it will be changed forever. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. No. Your roles change, your identities change, new identities emerge, right? The connection with your partner is tested, but it's also a rebirth of your relationship, and you can embrace that. You're in the trenches together, and that can be a space where you grow as a couple. Yeah. It can also be a space, of course, where lots of challenges come up and lots of problems.
Something that I'm thinking of right now within the parenting philosophies, and this is maybe where a lot of arguments originate and arguments turn into, I mean, an argument in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. You can work through arguments. You're never going to fully agree with everything, and always, you know, arguments are, there's value in arguments. But one of the reasons I think they start with once a couple has a baby is because you don't realize the number of decisions that need to be made. At every stage of development, there are dozens of decisions. Now, some of these decisions are decisions you make daily, decisions you make weekly, monthly, but then every 3 months, your baby is in a new stage of development. Maybe there's the way they're sleeping is different. And now you have to make a decision about how you're going to handle that. Are you going to hire someone who's going to come and be the sleep trainer? Are you going to do that? Are you going to maybe do something completely different and co-sleep or sleep with them? There are so many decisions. You know, when your baby gets sick, there's decisions around which doctor do you take them to? Which medications do you give? Right. And now it's like, so what can be challenging is if the individual partners have different experiences and different filters and different philosophies about each of these little decisions along the way, it can be a real source for disagreement and argument. And keep in mind that when you're now entering into arguments and maybe one person is sleep deprived, now you're both exhausted. Your fuse is already shorter because you don't have the same time and energy and space that you used to have before, right? So what advice or what ideas do you have for couples to navigate through the dozens and dozens of very challenging decisions that need to be made through every stage of development for a young child?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The lack of sleep is a huge factor, right? 4 out of 5 primary caretakers express this overwhelming fatigue that they have. And the partner, even if the partner is maybe not the primary one, but the breadwinner, they are also tired. We're all tired and we're irritated, we're short-tempered. Yeah. We're not capable of problem solving very well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of cutting each other slack, right? And then again, the stronger your communication skills are before you get into the situation, the better. Then you can fall back onto habits you already have, where you have a habit to have a caring and sharing time, where you check in with each other. Mm-hmm. Lots of new mothers, new fathers long to hear some positive comments from their partner. They want to be assured that the good mothers, we're good fathers, we're doing our best, right? The birthing mother. I mean, it could also be two mothers in a family, right? So I'm trying to be mindful of my wording here. But the birthing mother might also wonder, am I still attractive after this experience that my body went through? So getting some feedback from your partner makes a huge difference. The first huge hurdle is already the birth experience itself. In 8 out of 10 cases, that experience itself affects the relationship. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful life-changing experience. And I'm sure that's already the case when everything goes as planned, but then when problems show up, this is even more so the case. I know your third one was a preemie, right? So there's, that was probably a totally different level of stress. So that experience itself needs to be processed. That's where it really starts.
It absolutely is. And, oftentimes as you sort of alluded to, the birth doesn't go, you sort of have this vision of what it's going to be like. And maybe that means you're going to the hospital. Maybe that means you're not, in our case, we had a 2 home births for our first 2 children. And then the third one was sort of this unexpected situation. And the other thing is that the birth experience is, at least we found, to be very different once we already had a child. Because now it's not just the birth experience, but now you're involving other children in that. So it's, how much do you include them, like the other, based on their stage of development and their age, and how much do you include them in the process? And if things don't work out the way that you sort of anticipated, how does that emotionally affect the other children that are sort of in the picture? I guess if you sort of imagine a couple, two, 3 months into the experience, now they've had the baby, now they're starting to live their life after that, the delivery and being new parents, what would you say are some really healthy practices or some conversations even that might be beneficial in them having to make sure that their marriage continues to stay on a strong foundation, and so that they're, to give themselves the best chance of not creating a scenario where their child, by the time they turn 18, is in a single parent household? What can a young couple do in that situation?
There's many different things, really, depending on what shows up, right? But it really starts with the expectations, not having unrealistic expectations.
Okay.
When we start out with this expectation that our marriage will both be back to normal, and we have expectations of marriage always being interesting and stimulating and supportive and satisfying, and we have ideas of parenthood, and we expect that we will turn into these new wonderful versions of mothers and fathers, we set ourselves up for failure. Because the more realistic a couple's expectations are, the more successful they're going to be at managing all the challenges that come up. Yeah. So now that means examining my own expectations. It means talking to my partner about their expectations and sorting out a lot of things beforehand around how do we want to parent. But then you say reality hits, and there's all these details that we hadn't even thought of. You need to bring respect to the table. You need to bring to the table that your way is not necessarily the right way. So that willingness to communicate and to understand, where's my partner coming from, why is this important to them, and from there sorting out compromises. So really moving beyond right and wrong. Some people can be very rigid with how they expect things to be, and if I want they're both taking care of the baby or children, they're both taking care of the household to a certain extent, I need to be able to let go of any rigid ideas of how that should happen.
So I think that flexibility is so important, like the willingness to adapt and to maybe, because it's important to remember that the ideas that you had about the way things are going to go or the way things should be prior to having a child, well, all of those ideas were constructed based on theory, right? Based on like, well, you know, your imagination sort of plays it out. It's like, well, I can kind of imagine what it's like to have a baby. And you've seen other people that have babies and you're part of a family and you maybe you had a baby sister or a baby brother. And you remember what that was like when you were a 5 year old. And like in my case, I was five when my youngest sister was born. I can kind of think back to my childhood in ages 6 and 7 and 8. And then I kind of vaguely remember having a baby around. Surely that couldn't have been too challenging for my parents, right? Like, you know, they seem to handle it pretty well from my recollection. But this is truly one of those things that until you are in the experience, it is very difficult to really know what the best approach is going to be. I know for sure me and Jenny have done things and made decisions and created solutions differently. Like if you had asked us about a lot of these different things prior to having children, the answers we would have given you when we were just a married couple thinking about having kids versus the actual answers and the realities of the situation now having three children, there would be a significant difference in what we would have predicted versus what we actually are practicing. You have to just experience it. And then I can imagine that there's other issues too, like the prevalence of postpartum depression, for example, is also something that can be a factor.
Yes.
What about more serious issues like that, for example, if that's happening and beyond the birth?
Yeah, I would really like to talk about that because that is again another topic where as a newly parents, you need to realize you're not alone, because 8 out of 10 birthing mothers experience a period of tearfulness and anxiety after the child shows up. And that can last for several weeks. And these statistics are actually from a book by Rhonda Cruz Norden. She's written this book after the baby. So she's researched and brought statistics together. Mm. But at least, because this is undiagnosed often, a fifth of new mothers experience a clinically diagnosed depression. So that means between 20 and 40% of all women suffer from late onset postpartum depression. And that begins usually like 20 to 40 days after giving birth, can actually occur though at any time during the first year. So for the listeners, what does that mean? That means sadness, fatigue, loss of energy, feeling futility, feeling that things are pointless, sexual disinterest, feelings of total inertia sometimes, right? Unfortunately, there's so much pressure on young families and young mothers that they should be happy at this time in their life, that they hide behind a smile, right? And that means they're either diagnosed late or not diagnosed at all. And partners usually feel helpless and unsure of how to support. And many people don't even realize that postpartum depression also exists in men.
Hmm.
That is a thing. So for our listeners who are hearing this, if you or your partner has show signs of depression after giving birth, get help. Don't wait.
Hmm. Okay? Yeah, that is a very, first of all, I didn't know that really postpartum depression exists in men or that it can. I'm curious about that. The piece around the partner feeling helpless and unsure of how to help, I mean, that makes sense because in general, that's not going to be any sort of an area that the partner has had training or education or any experience on. So now that partner's learning how to be a parent themselves for the first time. And then they're trying to figure out, well, how do I support my partner who's experiencing this depression? I'm not equipped. I don't know anything about this, right? Like, how do I handle this situation? And then if you add in the layer of, well, the partner may also be experiencing their own depression to some degree. I mean, that it really adds a lot of different layers that I know sound sort of like doom and gloom. It's a little bit scary to think about a situation like that. Do you have any other best practices or pieces of advice for, let's say, for a partner who's is supporting someone that's going through that process?
Yeah, I think really it starts with realizing we're not alone. There is this shame piece, right? That's the problem. If the young mother wouldn't feel ashamed or feel, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this, something must be wrong with me. Here's this amazing life experience that I'm having. But also those so-called positive, happy life experiences go hand in hand with sadness, with loss. There's something new. It's a huge change. Right? It doesn't just happen when the so-called negative things happen, where someone dies or I'm losing my job or whatever. It also happens with these often highly anticipated and looked forward to events, like getting married, having children. So, first of all, realizing this is normal. There's nothing wrong with me at all. Right, because there's so many factors here: the hormones, what the whole situation was, how much support there's afterwards. So really,
And the sleep, the lack of
the
sleep, right?
sleep, yes.
That's not going to help when someone's going through depression and then they're also not getting enough sleep.
I
That's
mean,
going to amplify it.
another thing is that not all parents feel an immediate connection with their newborn. And there too, can you imagine the shame that often comes up around that? Because we have these ideas as mothers or fathers, we should feel that immediate connection, that loving, amazing connection. But that's also not necessarily the case. And then reaching out for help.
Something I know that we were interested in speaking about, and I think this is really important before having children. If there is an argument between the couple, it's no big deal. They can just have the argument and figure that out, sort it out and work through it. And there's no one else in the house anyway to observe it or to be affected by it. How does that change when there's now kids involved? Let's say there's an argument that's, between the mom and the dad, or the mom and the mom, or the dad and the dad. And now there's a discussion that's happening that's maybe more intense and negative in tone. What counsel do you give for parents in dealing with those sorts of arguments now that there are children in the picture as well?
Yeah, so conflict resolution skills are more important than ever.
Sure.
So if before I could maybe avoid conflicts, that's not doing conflicts well. And the children can actually learn from how how their parents handle conflicts, right? So if they observe, oh, okay, there's a disagreement. My parents are upset at each other, but they also can watch how we repair again after a conflict. How we connect again, how we compromise, how we resolve something, those are actually really useful skills for kids to learn. That's the stuff they need on the playground and later on in life. That, okay, if we disagree or if someone is angry, that's not the end of the world. I can trust we will both put the effort in to connect again, to understand each other, right? So there's a lot of great role modeling that can happen if I have the attitude that a conflict is not the problem, is not the problem, the conflict is not the problem. But if I don't know what to do, how to resolve it, or
Or
connect.
that, or if it stays unresolved,
Yes.
if it becomes the permanent energy you're feeling in the home, is like there's this permanent conflict that doesn't ever get resolved. What I'm hearing is like that is what, well, that ends up spiraling out in different ways, but that is more of the issue for the child in observation, is when they see that conflict not getting resolved for a sustained period of time.
Yeah, because that breeds resentment between the parents and contempt, and those are really lethal. The conflict that we have a disagreement is not a problem at all. That's life. We cannot always agree. But then what we do with it, that we both trust, where we have both feet in this relationship, we're going to work this out.
Yeah, I know from for our in our situation, I know, It also changes as your children get older, right? Because there's an awareness, their awareness is increasing and expanding. And so once they develop the language and they understand what you're saying and they hear the words and they can understand to a degree what the disagreement's about, it certainly changes the environment and the energy as well. I know with our son, who's the oldest, he's 6 and a half now, so he certainly has by far the most, like the heightened awareness, and he's very empathetic and has good social skills, so he picks up on all this stuff. And I know he's certainly witnessed myself and Jenny having disagreements and such, and we try to, in a way, almost include him in those situations. And in the way that we, I don't know, I'd be curious to hear your feedback on this. So we'll say, because sometimes Brady and Adelaide, our daughter, they'll have disagreements and arguments where they're fighting over a toy or something like this, and they start getting heated and frustrated. And so we, whenever that's happening for me and Jenny, and Brady's there, we sort of say, if Brady's, let's say that he's starting to get a little bit upset about it, which is understandable, we say, look, Mommy and Daddy are having a disagreement, just like you and Adelaide yesterday when you were having a disagreement about your game or your toy or whatever. It's just like that. And adults, we tell Brady, adults have that same thing happen to them too. And so we're going to work this out now, and we're going to work through it. And then it's going to be okay. And so we allow him to sort of feel that and move through it with us. And then at the end, he sees us hug and kiss and then we sort of move on. And it's like, and then he sees that, oh, okay, this actually doesn't have to be this like as big a deal, because 20 minutes later we're hugging and kissing and making dinner together. Like, I'm curious to hear your insights and feedback on sort of that sort of a scenario as it plays out.
Yeah, and I would say that is exactly perfect, right? That at least one parent explains and says, this is what's happening, right? You don't need to worry, we're working it out. And of course, you can only do that convincingly if you're actually working it out with your partner. But to see which, I mean, sometimes there's these ideas, oh, we only fight behind closed doors. The kids still feel the energy. They know. But they're not able to watch the process and realize that the process is good, is normal, is natural of disconnect. Now we need to talk, we need to connect. At the end, we're hugging, we're kissing, we've made up. We're actually closer than before, probably, after that conflict, because conflict actually, when we work through conflicts, it brings us closer. That fosters attachment. If I sweep conflicts under the carpet and I become resentful and make passive-aggressive comments, that's a way more challenging climate for kids.
Because it's confusing. It becomes very confusing. They don't know how to make sense of it.
And kids often make things mean something about them. Right. That is a natural, just from the more egocentric worldview a child has, I must have done something. This must be my fault.
It's my fault.
Right? So it's really good to let the children know.
Yeah.
This is what's happening. And look how we're resolving it.
Sure. I know we're coming up to the end of our time here in a few minutes. What can parents do to reconnect and not lose sight of the relationship with each other? If maybe they have felt like there's a bit of a disconnect after having kids and they're going through all these feelings and challenges, what can they do to sort of really reconnect and bring things back on track with their relationship?
Yeah, you do need to make time to talk. Because there's going to be different hurdles. Like in another area we haven't even touched yet is how the sex life changes and sexual desire changes, especially for the woman who is maybe breastfeeding, nursing, and then or has another little one hang on her. So there's a lot of
touch
already. So her
they're touched out.
Desire, she's touched out. Her desire for more is usually not that great, right? But we need to distinguish also between the emotional and the sexual intimacy. So even if there's no lovemaking or less lovemaking happening for a while, stay emotionally connected, because we still both, everybody needs that. The mother with the little ones hanging on her all day long still wants the emotional connection. And that's your bridge to bridge a period where there's maybe less happening in the bedroom. And then reassure each other that you're a good mother, a good father. That does a world, makes a world of a difference. What else comes to mind?
I do think that piece is really important. It's just like when you start a new job, let's say you start a new career or a new role, you know, it's helpful to hear from someone who's working with you, whether it's a colleague, a peer, a supervisor. It's good to know, hey, you're doing a good job. Hey, this is really good work. Like, keep it up, right? And think of it, you know, the way that I perceive this is when you become a parent, you're starting a new job. It's like starting a brand new career. And it's a career that you've never had any training for. Think about that way. Like, you've never had any training. You didn't go to school for it. You didn't study it for 4 years at university or college. And all of a sudden, you're now expected to do this job. Oh, and by the way, it's the most important job you could ever have because you're actually completely responsible for the health and well-being of another human. Completely. It's all on you. Good luck. Right? That's what it is with parenting. And it can feel very thankless. Like you're just giving and giving and giving and giving and you're not getting anything back. And so this is something I've slowly but surely gotten better at, finding those moments to genuinely acknowledge my partner and say, hey, you're an amazing mom. And here's why. And here's what I've noticed. You just, like over the weekend, for example, we had Adelaide's fourth birthday. And the reality of the situation with I'm sort of working most of the time, Jenny was the one who did most of the organizing of the events. And we had Princess Anna come, and there was a lot of logistics. People were invited, food had to be ordered, all these things, right? Grocery shopping and cleaning, making sure the house was presentable for the people that were coming. And of course, I didn't sit around in a lazy boy and just expect that all to happen. However, most of the coordination of those logistical events ended up being on Jenny. And so it was important for me to find a moment and just say, hey, it's amazing what you did to put this all together and to organize this party for Adelaide. She had an amazing day. That's all because of what you created. Wow. You know, and just to sort of take that. And it's one of those things I've found that it's really, although it's easy to do that to a degree, like just to say good job, it's also really easy to not do it because you're busy and everyone's trying to make the best of it. And it's easy to skip over it and just to not find that moment for acknowledgement, right?
Yeah, and often we think our partner knows.
Oh, they know. She should know.
Right? They know I appreciate them. No. There's no such thing as too many positive affirmations, right? Too many compliments. Yeah. There just isn't. Like with your kids, of course you know how important that element is of telling them, I'm proud of you. You did well. That feedback. Well, do the same for your partner.
Yeah.
We don't stop being human and needing that just because we were grown up or we've become parents.
In the final moments here, is there anything else that you really just feel, if there's a young couple that's listening to this right now or watching this, maybe they've just had a baby, they're about to have a baby, if there is sort of one final piece of advice that you'd be wanting to leave them with, what might that be?
I mean, first of all, I'm going to write a blog article, a blog post about this as well, where I will maybe put in some more statistics as well, so you can see you're not alone. There's lots of people struggling with exactly the same things. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, it always comes back to connection. Think of ways to connect. Think of ways to communicate. The connection piece, the disconnect is what makes everything challenging. So, and cut yourself some slack. Just do the best you can with the time you have. So where can you fit in at least a weekly sharing and caring half an hour where you talk about things? And throughout every day, see where you can get a moment to hug, to physically connect, right? We talked about this coming home exercise the other day in another podcast, how it calms our nervous system when we get to connect. Find a way to get some time in to talk. And just do your best to embrace this as a period, a new period. And it's a period where you can grow together, where you can learn and grow together.
Wonderful. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for that conversation. I think it was helpful for me, and I know it's going to be helpful for so many other parents who are tuning in. And perhaps even at some point, we might even do a part two, because this is obviously a topic that is it's vast. I mean, there's a lot we could talk about here. And it's also a topic that's almost never ending, because the children are continuing to grow and become different people. And there's so many different, radically different stages of development. Like, having a baby is completely different than having a six-year-old, in my experience. This is a completely different experience.
And that, again, is completely different from having a teenager.
And that's different from having a 14-year-old or a 17-year-old or someone who's now going to college. I mean, you have all these different. And then what's happening is the parents are changing too. It's not just the child. Like, you know, it's different. You know, being a 30-year-old is different than being a 50-year-old, right? And so, etc. This could go on for a long time. So I think there might even be a space for a part two. So thank you, Angelica, for that conversation. Thanks to everyone for tuning in, for being here. And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast. If you can think of someone that you know would benefit from hearing this conversation, absolutely go and share this with them. Send them the link. And thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.